From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert for Telemundo, Utah, on the ongoing immigration debate before Congress.
It seems a contradiction of American values that we would create almost a second class of residents. Those residents who at some point can obtain citizenship and those who will find a dead end at permanent residence. That strikes me as wrong.
Also today, the Utah State Bar's new Modest Means Lawyer Referral Program, whose aim is to make the justice system accessible to all without regard to economic status. All that and a local news summary just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. And you're listening to The Rundown, a news and information show where we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas. Here on the program, you can hear conversations with local newsmakers, trailblazers, cultural entrepreneurs, and more. Later in the program, we'll have a conversation with Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert with Telemundo, Utah, on the current state of the immigration debate in Washington. But today, we start by looking at a new initiative from the Utah Bar Association. As it turns out, most people find themselves in need of legal help at some point in their lives. The reasons can range from navigating a divorce to child custody, a landlord-tenant dispute, bankruptcy, or any number of other reasons. But lawyers are expensive, often costing $200 per hour or more. And that's why Utah Legal Services and the Utah Bar are putting into place programs that they hope will make access to legal help easier for Utahns. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has this story.
About 5 years ago, Diane and her siblings suspected their 82-year-old mother was being taken advantage of by one of their sisters.
She kept saying that her jewelry was missing, and we didn't know if maybe she misplaced it, because she does have Alzheimer's. But we found the box to the ring where she always kept it, and the rings were gone. And then further along, my sister was having all of my mom's mail routed to her house. And so that's when we found out that all of her bills were ready to get shut off.
But that wasn't all that was happening. Their sister had also taken her mother to banks and was shutting accounts and opening new ones to hide her money from the family. Diane says by the time they tracked it all down, she had gone through a total of 15 different accounts.
My mom was not living a very good lifestyle because her money was so strapped down that she felt like she couldn't buy anything for herself or anything. She didn't even really know how much money she had. That was what was so sad.
Diane and her family got help from Utah Aging Services through the Elder Abuse Program. They did an investigation and assisted her mom in getting access to free legal services to fill out documents and get protective orders in place. Sue Christman is the director of pro bono programs at Utah Legal Services.
Equal access has to be there in order for a justice system to exist. In order for people to feel like the justice system works, it has to work for everyone, irrespective of their income.
Diane says her mom, who is now in an assisted living facility, couldn't afford an attorney on her own.
I'm glad the service was open and available to her. I don't know where else we would have gone. Her money was really coming to a standstill and all of her bills were not being paid. So she wouldn't have any money to get an attorney.
There are many nonprofit groups that provide legal access to low-income individuals throughout Utah. However, each group takes on specific types of cases, which can make it difficult to navigate the system.
Utah Legal Services, Legal Aid Society of Salt Lake, Disability Law Center is also statewide, federally funded. People Helping People down in the Four Corner areas, Catholic Community Charities, Holy Cross, they're both here in Salt Lake. The self-help centers over at the court, they run a hotline.
Crispin says all of the groups try to keep in contact so they can refer people to the correct place when they come in for legal help. But having enough legal aid to match the need is a problem. She says her group, Utah Legal Services, helps about 8,000 people across the state every year. Some cases require brief advice or can be handled in clinics, but others require full legal services. For many cases, they rely on attorneys that provide pro bono services to the community.
It's actually a pretty giving community in Utah. We have 8,000 active attorneys. It'd be great if we got even a tenth of those, which is where we're at right now, but if we could continue to increase. Our goal this year is to get up to 1,400.
To help increase the number of participating attorneys and streamline the process, her group and the Utah Bar Association have created a Check Yes campaign that allows attorneys to volunteer for pro bono work when they file license applications and renewals. They are also planning to create a web-based system that will more easily match clients to attorneys.
I think the level of collaboration is pretty unprecedented in Utah. In Virginia, four different legal aid programs came together to develop one case management system with the pro bono portal. The unique thing is that we've got the judiciary involved, the bar involved, and legal services involved. So we're hoping to get all the nonprofits to be referring cases, the bulk of attorneys to be accepting cases, and also referrals will be coming from judges.
Many nonprofit groups provide access to legal help for people under 125% poverty, or almost $14,000 for an individual. But people in the middle income spectrum can also have a hard time paying the full price for legal services. To remedy this problem, the Utah Bar has just created a new Modest Means program, says Lori Nelson, the president of the Utah Bar Association.
The Modest Means attorneys agree to do a case for between $50 and $75 an hour, depending on the income qualifications. And in order to qualify, you have to have an income of $79,000 annually or less for a family of four.
Nelson says since they have just started matching clients and attorneys, it's currently unclear how many people they will be able to help with this program. But they hope to get a robust response from both groups over the next few months. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
And you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay tuned. And now we turn to our feature conversation with Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert with Telemundo Utah, and host of a local Spanish-language radio program that frequently looks at the issue of immigration reform. So, Mark, the Senate passed a massive immigration reform bill a couple of weeks ago, I think bill number S-744. Anyways, now the debate moves on to the House of Representatives. What's going on with that debate?
Yeah, and you're right. The proposal S-744, it's Border Security, Economic Opportunity, Immigration Modernization Act, passed the Senate in late June with a vote of 68 to 32, 68 in favor. And so it passed with an ample majority. Interestingly, 6 weeks ago, people were questioning whether it could even get through the Senate. Now the focus goes to the House. Having said that it's not an entirely new process, the House has had a parallel process going with the Senate for some time. It's because the Senate has passed immigration reform now that all the focus goes to the House. And I think the House is considering a number of different options, largely procedural. Will it take up the Senate bill? Probably not at this point. Will it try to develop a comprehensive proposal of its own? Possibly. There was a gang of eight in the House of Representatives, now the gang of seven. But they may try to present a comprehensive proposal, but it's looking more and more like the House might go with a step-by-step approach, starting with the conversation about immigration within the next week or two.
John Boehner, Speaker of the House, called the Senate bill a non-starter. Is the House actually going to address immigration reform? That's what he said, right? He said it was a non-starter?
He did. He called it a non-starter. But I think he's looking to do something on immigration, perhaps by August, by the recess, or certainly this year. He's mentioned that he'd like to finish the work on immigration this year. And so I'm confident that the House will do something on immigration. And while some have been very pessimistic about the House, I think immigration does have a slightly uphill battle in the House. I think we'll see some of the changes that happened in the Senate happen in the House as well. When interest groups come in, when businesses, agriculture, high tech, and others start to speak with members of the House about the need for immigration reform, when churches start to get involved, when people start telling their stories openly to people in the House of Representatives, I think we're going to see a change in the House of Representatives, probably toward something like what the Senate passed.
Why is the House's approach so piecemeal? I mean, they don't have anything nearly as broad in scope as the Senate plan. The rhetoric is different. Is the piecemeal approach the only way the House is going to actually address this?
I don't think it is. I hope the House will take up a comprehensive bill because I think it's better to deal with the immigration system as a whole than to deal with it part by part. Having said that, and I wrote an article for the Salt Lake Tribune some months ago. In fact, I think it was at the end of 2012. If somebody wants to go with a piecemeal approach, okay, let's start with the most critical humanitarian issue. What are you going to do with the 11 million undocumented immigrants who are living here? If people would start with that question and directly address that humanitarian challenge that the United States has, I actually have little objection to a piecemeal approach. The problem I have is that some of the piecemeal approach is being proposed by those who just want to stop immigration reform. I think piecemeal for some is a pretext. For example, I would say that very clearly and seen Rodeo's very bluntly about Mike Lee. Mike Lee used anchor baby as a term when he ran for the U.S. Senate back in 2010. He ran an anti-immigrant platform. He's now trying to etch-a-sketch that position to be more friendly to probably the Latino vote, to the Asian vote, maybe more friendly to the vote in general, saying I'm a good person. But I think the piecemeal approach from Mike Lee, that was clearly a pretext to impede immigration reform in the Senate.
So Mike Lee has shaken the Etch-a-Sketch, but you think that at heart he wants to obstruct this, but is just using the correct rhetoric?
I don't believe it's correct rhetoric. I'll go to what Pope Francis said yesterday, that what we're doing to immigrants, and he focusing on a certain incident, but what we're doing to immigrants is essentially showing a globalization of indifference to the plight of immigrants. And he talked to those who were lost at sea or who had difficulty at sea. But I think the Pope's words can apply in the United States as well. There's a globalization or certainly a nationalization of indifference to those 11 million people who have been living in the shadows for way too long. And I don't think Mike Lee's rhetoric does any service to the United States.
And what about the rest of Utah's congressional delegation? What are they saying? Since this is moving to the House, any word from Representative Matheson?
I've been critical of Matheson on my Facebook page. I've written articles about it as well. We two senators, Mike Lee, clearly tried to impede immigration reform. I'm not a big fan of Orrin Hatch. I think he tried to add too many conditions to immigration reform. But at the end of the day, he voted for immigration reform in the U.S. Senate. Jim Matheson is still silent. He's a Democrat. Utah Democrats are complaining about how Republicans have tried to impede immigration reform. Well, the one Utah Democrat who's representing Utah in the U.S. in the U.S. House of Representatives is still silent. Mm. That's a problem. And I go back to 2010. Jim Matheson voted against the DREAM Act. And some people say, well, why are you voting against people who were brought here as youth, who really through no fault of their own are undocumented in the United States? They're striving forward. Shouldn't they be given an opportunity to participate in the American dream? Jim Matheson voted no.
And this was an act that would have given people who were brought here under the age of what, 13?
It was under the age of 16.
Under the age of 16. So people who had been brought here when they were children to the U.S., it would have given them a pathway to citizenship. Is that right?
It would have given them legal status and an opportunity to gain permanent residence and then citizenship if they met education or military criteria. They had to either go to a few years of schooling at the university level or serve in the U.S. military.
So the premise question that you say, if people would address this question, what do we do with the 11 million undocumented immigrants who are here, has different answers. But sort of the most obvious one is, are we going to grant a pathway to citizenship for these undocumented immigrants or not? The Senate at the moment seems to have said yes. Members of the House of Representatives seem to be saying, no, that's not something we want to include.
Yeah, I think that's right. But even in the U.S. Senate, the S-744 includes a 10-year path not to citizenship, to permanent residence. So people who would get legalized in the Senate plan would have to be in registered provisional status during 10 years before they could apply for permanent residence. 3 years later, they could apply for citizenship. I think that's wrong. I actually do not like the Senate plan. That said, I support it because I think what's most important is to give people who have been here without documents and contributing. We're excluding people with serious criminal records, those who have caused trouble here. But those who haven't, those who have been progressing, should be allowed some opportunity to legalize their status and progress without having to continue to live in the shadows. 10 years for me is too long. 60% of undocumented immigrants have lived here for more than 10 years. We've been waiting for immigration reform for at least a decade. Why do we make them wait longer? That seems inhumane. That said, in this political environment, it may be the only thing that's possible. What some people in the House are suggesting is, well, let's give them some status, but we're not going to allow them to obtain citizenship at some time in the future. That strikes me as wrong. We've always had a tradition in the United States, if somebody becomes a permanent resident, resides here, contributes, they've always had some opportunity to gain citizenship in the future. It seems a contradiction of American values that we would create almost a second class of residents. You know, those residents who at some point can obtain citizenship and those who will find a dead end at permanent residence. That strikes me as wrong. That is what's being suggested by some people in the House of Representatives.
Well, let's talk a little bit, you know, about the indifference that you mentioned the Pope Francis talking about towards immigrants. I mean, the debate seems to focus really heavily on kind of policy ethos. You know, we're looking at numbers, we're looking at broad concepts, but we're not looking at families, individuals, people whose lives are really being affected by this. Maybe do you want to address why people come to the United States and also how maybe the debate overlooks the crisis that immigrants themselves face?
I think people come here for many reasons. They come here because they want to progress. Maybe they're having difficulty in their home countries. Maybe there's economic disparity. They come here looking for opportunity to get an education. There may be some educational opportunities that are available here that perhaps aren't in their countries. And sometimes, especially those without privilege, may not have any legal root here or may not have had any legal root in the past. I refuse to judge them. I think migration is a human act. I've migrated to Spain. I've migrated to Mexico. I'm not sure I followed all the laws. Having said that, I would do it again in a heartbeat because of all the things I learned, because of the progress I've been able to make. I learned Spanish as an adult, and I'm not Mormon, have never been Mormon. I learned Spanish in the bars and cafes in Spain. I lived there for 3 years. With the last name Alvarez, I look for how can I learn Spanish at some point? How can I learn another culture? Moving to another country was the way to do it, and I didn't have a lot of money, didn't have connections, and so I didn't have these easy routes available to me. That's a bit of a personal story, but I'm touched by some of the Dreamers' story. The Dreamers, the undocumented students. The argument is, well, they should have an opportunity because they came here through no fault of their own. Well, I've heard a lot of Dreamers make the very poignant argument for me, our parents were the original Dreamers. They may have come across without documents, but they were looking to make better lives for themselves, better lives for their families, better lives for their children. They succeeded. Now, some of them are working very difficult jobs. Some are working multiple jobs, and many, many scrape by. You know, some don't make much of a living from the perspective of somebody in the United States who's doing well, who doesn't think about perhaps the struggles some people go through. But these original Dreamers came because they wanted to make better lives for themselves, for their families. I think that, in a sense, that's part of the American dream. In fact, I've seen studies, although I don't want to make it too academic, but the American dream in some ways resides most strongly in immigrants, both documented and undocumented. Those people are striving to make better lives for themselves, clearly better lives for their families as well. In so doing, they make it better for their communities and make it better for all of us.
Mark, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I just want to thank you for coming in, and we appreciate the discussion. And we'll check back with you as this debate moves forward.
No, thank you very much for the invitation.
That's Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert with Telemundo Utah and host of the Spanish language radio program Sin Rodeos. You can hear the full version of our discussion at kcpw.org. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Salt Lake Police Department's Sergeant Jeff Webb and the County Health Department's Nicholas Rupp on the recent clearing of transient camps from City Creek Canyon. That discussion and more coming up tomorrow on The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Rundown today was produced by yours truly with help from Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Theme music for the program was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us today for The Rundown here on KCPW. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.